Succession number 31425, Mr. Mick Gagan, Reel 19. Now, so what happened then? How did you get home?
Well, I was sent down to, by train, we went to Tok Chon, a truck took us to Tok Chon, there was a few going, and we went from Tok Chon down to Pusan, and...
Anything happened on the way, or was it just...
No, it was just a journey in an old train and everything like that. And then we went into this camp down in Pusan, and in there was the King's Own Scottish Borderers. And Bill Speakman was there, who had won the VC. And when I first went to, out to Korea, I was attached to the King's Own Scottish Borderers in the OP. So I was well acquainted, I didn't know them, but I was well acquainted with the regiment. And then they were going to leave Korea, so they got full pipe band, what they could, and we went down to the United Nations Cemetery, and we had a memorial service for all those fellas what had got killed in Korea. And these Cosbys had a lot of people killed, and especially in the Guy Fawkes Day battle in 1951. And we went back there to Pusan, and we had a program given to us and everything, and it was a very touching scene. Wreaths were laid, the pipe played the lament, the one single piper, he played the lament. And I've actually seen those fellas who were in battle, couldn't care less, but crying, tears coming to their eyes, because that was, they're leaving their friends, who they come out with, a lot of them, and things like that. And then we went back into the camp.
That's a transit camp.
It was like a transit camp, yeah, and they were very easy with us. All you done was got up in the morning, you didn't have no duties or nothing. All you done was, you just got up and you pleased yourself. And we was there, I think we was there for about a week. And it was good. Sometimes they might come and call you, you know, you might have to do a guard for a couple of hours, something like that. But nothing out of the ordinary. And then we were taken down and we were put on the ship, the troop ship, name of HMS Fowey, Fowey. And we were all put on there, and the accommodation was quite good for a troop ship. Well, I'd say it was very good. And I think it was just on the Christmas, because they were bringing in the... It was in the
camp. That's 2 months then from when you left the unit. Left in October.
No, it wasn't Christmas. No, it was on the troop ship. It was a celebration, and they had a haggis. And they had a haggis. And this was in the big restaurant on the boat. And the cook come in. He's dressed all in white. I can see him now. His big hat on, everything. Two pipers leading him. And we're all there cheering. They're leading in the haggis. And it was a big haggis, what they had made. And the funniest thing happened on that boat. They walked in, and the man holding a big tray, it must have been about 2 foot across, and the haggis on, and he's coming all proud. And the next minute he slipped on some grease or something. It's gone up in the air. The haggis has come down, broke all over his knees, and the pipe was, well, they couldn't move for laughing. And it was real, real good fun, you know. And it was a decent trip back. And we called in a few places on the way back, Singapore and Colombo. And you just went ashore, stretch your legs, perhaps have a drink and come back. And then that was it until we reached England.
And what was your reception like in England? What about the customs?
There was the customs there asking you if you got this and all that. It was a troop ship. And... one fella, he'd come back and he was wounded. He'd been wounded and he'd only a conscript, but he had done about 4 months extra to what he had because he had been in hospital in Japan, in Kyuri, and he was sleeping on our deck. And when he came through, he had his kit bag, but he did have nothing, and he had his arm done up. And the customs man looked at him, and he said, and the bag looked a bit heavy. And he said to him, "What you got in there?" So he said, "Dirty washing." He said, "Well, can we undo it?" "Well, this fellow's gone mad." And he's pulled out, undone his bag, he's thrown it all over the floor. The customs men, the military police was there. They come up, and the bloke's still throwing it all over the place, all his dirty washing. He'd had months of dirty washing, and he couldn't have cared less. And he said to the military police, "If you want that cleared up..." Then he showed all his arm in place where he'd been wounded, and he had done extra time, and that fella couldn't have cared less, you know. And I think that the customs man done it. If he hadn't have done that, it would have been all okay. And this fella was crying and everything, you know. And the officers come over and calmed him down, and they was picking all his gear up, putting it in the bag, and see him off. But other than that, it was quite a decent... When we come through, I mean, everyone was pretty decent to us. There was no welcoming committee or no bands.
Now, when did you get back? December or?
Oh, I can't remember when. I can't remember when I got back.
Before Christmas?
I don't know whether it was before or after. I think it might have been just before. Yeah.
So you probably came back November or December.
Something like that. Yeah, I can't remember all because so much happened since then.
I understand.
But. We was put on the train, and I was taken to Aldershot. Most of the troops were taken to Aldershot. I wasn't taken back to an artillery depot. And then I think that from there I was transferred. Someone said I stayed in there overnight. Then I went to Woolwich for a couple of days. Then I got sent back to Aldershot to get a suit, and that because I was getting demobbed.
Now tell me, what was the demob procedure?
Well, you went in, the demob procedure, you went in there, you got your uniforms on, and you went through this place, and if you knew someone there, it could have been a help. But you were going through and they're saying, "Well, what size suit are you?" and everything. And they got racks of suits. You got to go and pick one what you wanted. And, and they wasn't all that good, some of them suits. And then shirts, they were all hanging up on a rack. And you went and sorted out yourself a shirt and tie. And then once you've sorted all them out, you took them to this counter, and then they'd check up, see what you've got, fold them all up, put them all in little boxes. You'd have a suit, and they'd give you shoes and things like that. And I don't know if it was only the regulars, but I don't think that the conscripts got.
Now this was round about December. You're not sure?
No, I'm not sure. No.
52.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. Now, what were you going to do? You're out of the army, but you're a regular. I mean, what's going
to
happen?
I had to go. I was a regular soldier, so I had to sign, for what I'd done, I had to sign a secrecy act. Because at one time, I had to learn codes and everything like this, and like a special service. So I had to sign a secrecy act when I came out, being a regular as well. Then I was transferred to the Army Reserve.
Now, what does that mean?
That means that I'm still can be called up, but I'm on the Army Reserve. If I left the country, the Ministry of Defence would have to be let known that I wasn't there. And every 3 months, being on the reserve, no, every 4 months, I could go for training every 4 months to an army camp. Even though I've got another 6 years to do, I could go every 4 months.
So from 53 to about 59?
Yeah.
Now, were you attached to a specific TA unit or unit?
No. This was all done at like administration in administration. I wasn't attached to anybody.
Now, did you actually have to go for any training?
I went back twice, only for a week.
Now, where'd you go?
I went to Shoeburyness, that was an artillery, just that's in Essex, and also somewhere down in Kent. I think it was Shorncliffe.
What was it like?
Well, we got in there and it was just, to us, like, to myself, it was just like going, like on a reunion, because you just, the officers told you what you had done, asked you what you had done and everything, and also, with the signallers, they still had some of them sets, the 22s and 21s, and I'd show them little things which they didn't know, even to get a netting call, which not many people used to know. I'd take a bulb out, take a clip off, fix this bulb onto the end, and then press this pressel switch, and I could work out the dial and bring it right up to full volume, which even the officers there hadn't even known what to do, you know. But this was one thing what I'd learnt from some of the other old soldiers. And I used to get a small cheque come every 4 months. It'd only be for a couple of pounds in those days. But that was just to keep you tied to the army, sort of thing. And also they said that I could be called up any time until I was 44 years of age, even though I wouldn't be that age, Tommy.
So it wasn't just 6 years, it was longer than that.
Yeah, so 12 years.
12 years?
Yeah, I'd signed on for 12 years at the beginning, 5 years and seven. 5 years army, 7 years reserve.
So it was 7 years reserve.
Yeah, but then I got the extra year, so it was only... And in that reserve time, if there had been a war, I could have been called up at any time. And there wasn't nothing, because I'd signed on for 12 years at the very beginning. And
now, what were you going to do when you got out then?
Well, I didn't know what I was going to do, because I'd been in the building beforehand. And those times, when I come out, work was very hard to find. It was very hard. And no jobs going or nothing. And times were really hard. And I came out and I got a job in... And it used to be called the Acia. And it was an electrical firm. They made all big generators to send abroad and everything like that, which were later taken over by Hawker Siddeley. And I went in there and I went on the maintenance department.
As an electrician?
No, as a handyman to the foreman himself who was in there. Because I was in the woodworking department and everything. Because I used to, you'd have to be on the saws and everything like that. And also, through playing football and that for combined services and the army, I did get a trial for Leighton amateurs, which I had a few games for them. But it meant travelling here and travelling there. In those days, you didn't get much money. And they didn't even like paying you expenses. So, but when I worked for the Acia, I said that I played football, and I played twice in the reserve team. Then I was put into their first team. And I think it was 1953, we won the league, and I was either centre forward or right wing, and I got on very well with that firm.
So how long were you with them?
But I was only with them for a few months.
Just in 53 then?
Yeah, I was with them for a few months, and I was getting very restless because it was in a factory, and I was going to go on other jobs, but employment was very scarce and that. And that was when I decided to join the Merchant Navy.
Now tell us about that then.
Well, I put in...
In outline, you know.
Yeah. I put in to join the Merchant Navy. I had to go up into London and everything like that, filled all the forms in and said I was ex-service. Then I came back, and within about a week I'd got a letter that I've got to go for a medical. So I went up to London, I had a medical, which I passed, no problem. And then within about 10 days, I got a letter that I've got to report to Canning Place up in Liverpool. And I was going to do training as a fireman. I couldn't get in as a deckhand or anything like that.
Now, what's a fireman? Do you mean a stoker? Or
well, they were called firemen those days, and now you work in the engine room, because they were getting a bit, they had vacancies in the engine room. So I went to Canning Place, and I was going there for a four-week course. Also, I had to learn coal burning fires, shoveling coal in the old coal burning ships, everything like this. Learn all about boilers, to clean in the tubes, everything. And it was a very, very strict course. You started at 8 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes you'd be working till 5 and 6 at night. And a lot of this was practical training as well, not just theory. It was practical. And I was there for, and the place where we were, it was an old Ballstall institution, so the rooms come off of the, there was a big winding staircase with all wires all round inside, and then the rooms come off of that, and you might have one bathroom between about 8 rooms, so you took turns when to go into the bathroom and everything like this. And I was there for about a month, and I'd passed well. He reckoned that I'd done very, very well, and I managed to get my certificate as a fireman in the Merchant Navy. And from there, I was sent home on 4 days' leave. Then I had to report to the Southampton, to the Mauritania, HMS Mauritania, from the Cunard line, and I was going on there as a fireman. And most of them before, they'd been on the ship for ages, so they were like all knew their stuff. So I had to learn what from them as well, what to do, you know. But they were a good lot of lads in there, in the Merchant Navy, in the firing room.
What do you remember? Just give it a, because it's not really too much in our subject, but give us an idea of what life was like on the Mauritania.
Well, life was
famous old ship.
Yeah, it was a famous, and also it was a passenger ship, so all the passengers would be coming down. Now you've got to go through the corridors to get down to the firing boilers and everything like this, and it was a lively ship. You got all the deckhands, they'd be taking all the supplies in and everything through the side of the ship. We'd be taking a hell of a lot of fuel in as well. Through the you was working nearly all the time when you was in dock. And then you'd do an 8-hour shift when you are working. And we had our own galley, our own cook. And there may be perhaps 12 firemen there, or 15 firemen. We got our own mess, so the cook cooked just for us and that, and the food was very good for what it was. It was excellent sometimes. And
what was it like in the when you were on duty? What was it like in there?
When it was on duty, you were there really going to town, because you wasn't only oiling up all the gears and everything. You had to walk around, you got your oil can. You had to make sure that no joints were dried up through the turning, especially on the main shaft, which drove the propellers right through the ship. That was so noisy, like a train going through. And you'd be there going down, checking all the everything there. And you got these outlets for oil, and you have to you're walking up and down all the time for the whole 8 hours, checking all, making sure that everything is going, and also the burners, because you've got big boilers going there, you've got your flames going through, and you've got to make sure that no boiler is burning more than another one, and you've got your meters up and everything like this, so you're keeping a check on all them. So you didn't get much time to stand about. You were here, and also you've got to check the water pressures going up into the ship and things like this, and also the outlets going outside, make sure that they're not blocked up like the boilers which you've got in your own house. You've got to make sure that everything was working well in that respect. And sometimes when the ship, if you got in a bad storm, you'd be sliding here and there, but you still got to go down and make sure that everything is all okay.
And now, how long were you on her for? Where'd you go with her?
We went to New York. That was the first stop. Went to New York and then right down the coast, and then we went out to Curacao in Trinidad. It was a tour on that boat, and people were getting on and off and going here, there and everywhere. Some had booked into New York and they'd get off, and then we'd go to different places from there, pick up passengers, also drop passengers, pick up goods and everything like that.
You on her for long?
I did one trip on her. I suppose I was on her for a couple of months.
Did you not think of joining as a wireless operator, or you know?
No, because wireless operator in the Merchant Navy, mostly naval people, had to learn, because the speeds what they used to learn, especially Morse and everything like that, which we'd never learn in the Army. Okay. And I had no intentions, going anything like that.
So, give us a... I mean, we can't do it too much. We're just sketching the rest of your time with the Merchant Marine.
Well, I came home, and the next boat I went on was the Warwick Castle. And this was going all round South Africa. And we went from here to Lehar. We went from here to the Ascension Islands to St Helena to South Africa, South Africa, Port Elizabeth, Dar es Salaam, right up to Portuguese East Africa, Lourenco Marques, Beira. And during this time, a couple of African lads had jumped on, coloured boys had jumped, stowed away on the boat in South Africa, and they were found in Lourenco Marques, and they were really roughly handled getting ashore in those days. They were dragged ashore, and we've even seen the Portuguese police hit them with a truncheon when they've dragged them off the ship. And of course, we've all shouted out and everything, but it wasn't a thing we could do. And then also, some of the Merchant Navy fellas had missed the boat through drink, and they were flown up and caught the boat up halfway there. So they were fined by the captain and everything like that, and stopped the airfare out of their money. And from there we went right the way around to we went from there up to Mombasa, where I had a terrific toothaches. And I went there and I had my two wisdom teeth removed in Mombasa. Then from there, while we were there, we were there for a few days, and we was just outside the harbour, and the cook put a big lump of meat on the derrick and let it down on a hook, and we caught a shark about 12 foot long. And they pulled it up on the derrick, got it on the deck, and people were having their photos taken with it and everything like that. And also, that evening, the messes all had a nice big lump of shark meat, so it was very good. And from there we went up to Port Sudan. We went to Port Sudan. From there, all round Italy, Geneva, things like that, Marseille. And then we came back through Gibraltar and back to England. I was off that boat for about 2 weeks. Then I was assigned to another boat. That was the Andrea. That was a Cunard boat, the Andrea.
A-N-D-R-I-A,
the Andrea. But that was only a small cargo boat of about 6,000 tonnes. But I was going as a fireman on there, because I'd been well established by that time, on a fireman, and I was going there as a fireman. And also on that boat was something which was happening there. They had a big rodeo in London, and on that boat, the Andrea, we were taking Gene Autry's horse, Champion, and another horse back. And we had two big boxes put on the deck, and Gene Autry and his manager himself came on, and we were standing there, and Gene Autry shook hands with us and said, "Keep an eye on the horses and everything," which we did, because we used to go up and see the horse. You know, I've been in many films. But this trip was, we'd got in some really bad storm in the Atlantic, and those horses had to be strapped to the boxes to save them moving about. Straps were put round them so that they couldn't move or anything like that. And when we did get to New York, Gene Autry came on, because they had flown back, and it took a while to get to New York on that small boat. And he was giving a show in Madison Square Garden 2 days later. And we had, because all these, everything before had gone on boats months before back in there, what had happened, and I was bringing cattle from all over different parts of the state for the rodeo. And Gene Autry invited all of us from the boat to Madison Square Garden, where he was giving a rodeo. And we went there, I mean, those what could, because some had to stay on the ship, but I was one of the lucky ones. I went there, and during the, and he's introducing everyone, like from the Lone Star State of Texas, everyone got up and cheered, and from Minnesota and everywhere else. And then he said, "I'd like to present to you some people," he said, "they've been marvellous to my animals on the way here." He said, "And I'd like, from Great Britain, I'd like to introduce you to the crew of the ship Andrea." And we stood up and we get a big cheer. And it was marvellous. And we had a beautiful night there. And the next day, I went there, and Gene Autry gave me a photo, which I still have, which he had signed himself to me. And from there, we went to Boston, Baltimore. We were picking up coal and bringing coal back, things like this.
Now, it's probably, we're getting a bit too much detail for the museum.
Oh, I see.
On these trips. Yeah. So how many more, what other ships were you on?
Well, I came back and I'd had enough of the Merchant Navy.
That's fine then. The Andrea was the last one.
The Andrea was the last one, for the simple reason that it wasn't the atmosphere, it wasn't the comradeship in the Merchant Navy what you got in the Army. And you got drunks and everything in that Merchant Navy, which you'd never get in the Army. And I was so fed up with it as well. And being in a one confined area for months at a time, weeks at a time, down the engine room and everything, that I came out of the Army.
So when did you come out of the Merchant Navy?
I was in there for, I think, nearly a year.
So just till 54, really?
Yeah.
Or 55, probably?
Yeah. I think it was 54.